I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Ivo Graham, Sophie Duker, Karen Barkey, Huge Davis. And this is...
The Now Show!
Thank you very much indeed. So, how's leaving the EU going? Well, let's put it this way. This week, Sky News announced the launch of a brand new channel, and it's called...
Sky News Brexit Free.
It's the will of the people, apparently. According to the broadcaster, 30% of the British public are now avoiding news completely. So quite how they're going to hear about this new channel, I'm not quite sure. But clearly it's a big market, so if you turn to 4Extra Now, you can hear Now Show Brexit Free.
But we should warn you, it consists of a bake-off joke, 27 minutes of light music, and a Jürgen Klopp impression.
Now, however...
It doesn't really work on the radio.
However, in this version here, we are stuck with Brexit.
So this week, the EU withdrawal bill was withdrawn.
Now, actually, it wasn't technically withdrawn, just paused. MPs voted to give it a second reading, even though quite a few of them admitted they hadn't read it once yet.
But if you're confused, don't worry, because everyone else is. And it's not surprising. In the last few days alone, the Prime Minister has told us that he would never ask for the extension that he's now asked for, that he would pull the bill that he hasn't pulled, and he would call an election, which he can't call.
And he can't call it because his party, which he says doesn't do deals with other parties, did a deal in 2010 with the Lib Dems, who insisted on a fixed-term Parliament Act, and then did another deal in 2017 with the DUP, whose support he needs until he gets the election he can't call, so he can drop the deal his party doesn't do, get the timetable he can't pass past an opposition who don't agree on a bill they didn't see till this week. You can see why Sky News have started a new channel. Now, it looks at the time we're recording this that the budget is cancelled, but an extension may well happen.
And of course, it's caused problems for the government's advertising campaign. Those Get Ready for Brexit adverts are bad enough as it is. You must have seen them by now. They don't tell you anything. They're basically this.
Are you ready? If you're travelling abroad, check your passport. We're not telling you what for. Businesses may need to do additional paperwork. We don't know yet, be honest. You need to check some other stuff, probably. For more information, go to our website, where you'll find a phone number to call a helpline which can answer all your questions on how much we've spent on these ads.
Meanwhile, Labour seem to have surprised everybody with a clear, succinct position on what they want.
Extension, then... election.
Now, maybe this is their new policy. Three-word summaries for all the major issues. Transport.
Nationalise the trains.
Health.
Fund the NHS.
Another Jewish MP resigning.
Well, nice chatting.
Now, January 31st is looking likely, thanks to a combination of Tory dissenters, DUP and opposition MPs that used to be called the Rebel Alliance.
But from now on will be known as Extension Rebellion. The DUP, of course, were extra annoyed because when they saw the withdrawal agreement, they realised that they had lived up to their name.
We have been DUPED.
They were possibly extra annoyed because within a couple of days of realising this, they had to watch Northern Ireland legalise same-sex marriage and abortion, bringing it in line with the laws of the rest of the UK.
Just in time for all the trading laws to be separated again. Now, in any other week, that would probably be the top story, especially on...
Sky News Brexit Free.
But this week, it's all been about the B word. It was always a tall order for the Prime Minister to get it all done in 100 days. But that seems to be a figure that the media love. For some unfathomable reason, BBC News Channel still calls its Washington-based show Beyond 100 Days, when Trump has now been in office for nearly 3 years. It's so bizarre. It's like calling Doctor Who Beyond Christopher Eccleston. Just give me a straightforward title.
Sky News, Brexit Free.
Is much more like it. Now, the whole timetable thing, of course, was plucked out of the air anyway. I mean, what happens if we don't leave on October the 31st by midnight?
Well, I'm pretty sure that Boris Johnson won't turn into a pumpkin. If only because that's the one night of the year when a pumpkin would actually be useful.
Yes. Although if he is planning to woo anyone with a glass slipper, he'd be better off waiting anyway, because that is almost certainly banned under EU health and safety legislation. Now, as for the Europeans, well, they are in despair, I should think, although on the plus side, they have developed a new TV format.
Now on Dave, Tuskmaster.
In which, assured by the British that they can deliver, Donald Tusk gives the UK a series of tasks to complete within a deadline.
Well, you have until March to complete this Tusk. So I had a little joke there.
The British then struggle.
Okay, you have until October to complete this Tusk. No, not enough time. Okay, you have until January to complete this Tusk. No, no good. Oh, look, just go away and have a think and tell us when you've decided anything. I'm going to go and watch Sky Brexit Free.
Now, the House of Commons, it appears, just simply is not designed to cope with the idea that an MP might judge the wishes of their constituents and the interests of their constituents to be different things. And the result is that we now face the prospect of a general election in the run-up to Christmas, possibly on December the 12th, a prospect that is as confusing as it is depressing.
Can we open the advent calendar, please, please?
Oh, go on then. What's behind the door today?
It's two Liberal Democrats with a leaflet again.
Close the door now.
So, realising this news, we decided to do the only responsible grown-up thing. We went to the government's Get Ready for Brexit website and we filled in the form as if we were Father Christmas. Sole trader delivery company based outside the EU, bringing team of live animals for short business visit mid-December. And the best part, this is absolutely true, the best part is that the website told us...
Take out appropriate travel insurance with health cover before travelling to the UK.
Which seems like good advice to me with all those slippery roofs. Maybe we've misjudged them. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, our next guest is preparing to take his Edinburgh Comedy Award-nominated show, The Game of Life, on tour. Would you please welcome Ivo Graham?
I pride myself on using my Radio 4 platform to address the most bitingly relevant pop cultural topics. And that's why today I'm going to talk about James Blunt. That's right, James Blunt, writer of the fourth biggest song of 2005, after Is This the Way to Amarillo by Tony Christie and Peter Kay, That's My Goal by Shane Ward, and Axel F by The Crazy Frog. What a time it was to be alive. Now, you might say James Blunt is one of those things that should stay in the past, like Lance Armstrong's Livestrong wristbands, or Justin Trudeau's high school yearbook. And back in the mid-noughties, JB was quite the hate figure, owing to the fact that his songs were tosh and he was posh. The first line of You're Beautiful was literally, My life is brilliant. Now, as a plummy-voiced boarding school belle who spent 10 years on the UK comedy circuit, I've learned a few lessons about checking your privilege, and the main one is not turning up and immediately announcing your life is brilliant. Bit of self-deprecation first to get 'em on side. Now, James Blunt hasn't hit those heights since. His recent albums have failed to match his early commercial success, and the rise of Jeremy Hunt has meant he's not even a big deal on the rhyming slang scene anymore. He still had stuff going on. He got married, he was a judge on X Factor Australia, and was named Teen Idol of Turkey 2011. And this week, he was back in the news after saying in an interview that we just needed to get on with Brexit, a comment that didn't play well with those who are going to have their lives a bit more disrupted by crashing out of the EU than James Blunt is. Blunt said,
I'm going to carry on touring through Europe, whatever happens.
To which I imagine Michel Barnier replied,
In 3.5 years of negotiation, this is the worst threat yet.
Now in 2019, the line between celebrity and politician is more blurred than ever. The president of the USA is Donald Trump, former host of The Apprentice, and the most influential figure in modern British politics is Nigel Farage, an LBC presenter with a 20-year side hustle of failing to become an MP. But despite this shift in the goalposts, there's still a bit of a taboo around celebrities getting involved. In the 80s, most cultural voices were anti-establishment, with a few notable exceptions. Kenny Everett faced a huge backlash for appearing at a Conservative rally, where he cheered on Margaret Thatcher and shouted, "Let's bomb Russia!" Something that might have been classic banter in 1983, but these days would see you getting an invitation to lunch at Itsu. By the mid-90s, celebrities were then queuing up to endorse New Labour. Most famously, Oasis's Noel Gallagher chillaxing with Tony Blair at a Downing Street drinks party in 1997. 10 years later, that excitement had fizzled out, and Gallagher referred to the Labour Party as the death of politics, having already protested by refusing to write any good songs since Blair became Prime Minister. The first general election I had a say in was 2010, the year of, pause for dramatic effect, Cleggmania. The Lib Dem leader was endorsed by a host of celebrities, including my fellow first-time voter, Daniel Radcliffe. And that was all I needed. No one has a better nose for good and evil than the boy who lived. Sadly, mere hours after the results came in, the polyjuice potion wore off and Clegg turned out to really love tuition fees. Then we get to what historians mournfully refer to as the Russell Brand years, where the tweens of 2015 were told not to vote by a sex addict with an impressive vocabulary. Brand changed his tune a week before polling day, going all Saturday Kitchen with Ed Miliband and urging his fans to defeat the Tories. Sadly, by that point, it was too late for them or Russell himself to register to vote he vote. Labour were trounced in the polls, chaos with Ed Miliband was averted, and Whitehall welcomed back David Cameron with his exciting manifesto pledge of a referendum on Europe. So now we have Brexit, where to offer any public opinion on it at all is to scald your hands on the hottest potato of all time. Celebrate our impending national sovereignty? Racist. Demand a second referendum? Traitor. Suggest that we just need to get on with it? Total James Blunt. But the pressure on celebrities to air their views also comes from us, and a social media climate that puts celebrities in the constant firing line, as well as dismissing any left-wing thought as virtue signalling. Gary Lineker gets abuse on Twitter for airing his political views, but he also gets abuse on Twitter just for listing the match of the day running order. I'm sure he yearns for the days where he wasn't called a Ramona Cuck just because Aston Villa were on last again. If I were to defend James Blunt, I know, posho sticks up for fellow posho shocker. He didn't actually set out to give a political interview. He was put on the spot by a journalist and his answer went straight in the headline. But he could definitely have played it better. He should have said, "Listen, I, James Blunt, understand Brexit better than anyone. It's a national addiction that we cannot kick, however much we might want to. And in 2005, that addiction was my music." But stay positive and one day Britain might move on from Brexit, just like Britain eventually moved on from You're Beautiful. Although it's not my place to downplay such a serious issue, because as I've made clear many times, my life is brilliant. Now, here's the crazy frog to tell us about climate change. Thank you. You're beautiful.
Nominated for Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Comedy Awards for her show Venus, which you luckily can also catch here on Earth at the Soho Theatre, would you please welcome Sophie Duca?
Hello, it's me, Sophie Duca, adorable minority comedian and amateur royal correspondent, here to give you the latest scoop of steaming hot palace goss. This week, the Duchess of Sussex, aka Meghan Markle, opened up about the difficulties of life in the spotlight in a documentary interview conducted by journalist Tom Bradby. I've always found Meghan Markle fascinating because she's a woman with the poise of a goddess and the name of a minor Harry Potter character. The documentary itself was called Meghan and Harry, An African Journey, a name which surely makes it the natural successor to Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. During their African journey, the couple bid to put an end to the media scrutiny into their private lives. How? By talking candidly on national television about their private lives. Meghan said she was warned by friends that the British tabloids would destroy her life, but had no idea about the level of scrutiny she would face. I really feel for her. A former Hollywood actress and public figure in America, there's absolutely no way that Meghan could have anticipated that British people also had newspapers. How can Meghan not have twigged the tabloids would destroy her life? It's hardly an experience unique to royals. The British tabloids have ruined all of our lives. Not one of us can see two women in the same outfit at a dinner party without some little part of our brain whispering, "Who wore it best?" I can't hear about a couple's weekend away without describing it as a romp. And I'm disappointed by the third page of every book I read because I'm still half expecting to see a pair of tits. That said, I'm not sure Meghan's life has been destroyed. I mean, she still lives rent-free in central London. Sure, it is with her in-laws, but that's just the millennial way. Meghan has consistently had a fraught relationship with the British press, some of whom immediately deemed her unsuitable for royal life. But we all know why some people deemed Meghan unsuitable. Not because she's an actress in the popular costume drama Suits, not because she's a divorcee, not because she's older than Harry, not because she's American, which is admittedly gross. But because Meghan is a bit black. Just a bit black, not Stop and Search black. The Sunday roast is a little bit spicy black. I think that Meghan's heritage presents a problem for the media because they don't know how to write about her. She's black, but she's fancy. When she first started dating Prince Harry, Forbes magazine called her well-spoken. Well-spoken. Forbes magazine must think black women pop out of the womb with vocabulary completely made up of sassy grunts and Bible verses. But we can only say things like, and child, and Lord Jesus. As a newlywed and a new mum, Meghan's had to deal with a lot. Sleepless nights, sore nipples, taking care of someone who can't wipe their own arse. And then she had a baby. While conducting Meghan's first on-screen interview since the birth of her son Archie, Tom Bradby visibly moved Meghan by asking the question all new mums long to hear, "You okay, hun?" Meghan's emotional response shows she hasn't learned that if you're in distress, the correct British response to "how are you" is, "Oh, fine." Meghan said the British tactic of adopting a stiff upper lip was probably internally damaging. How dare she? A stiff upper lip is one of our nation's noblest traditions. Up there with stealing traffic cones, resenting your neighbours, and shouting, "Hooray!" when someone drops a pint glass in a pub. Bradby also quizzed Harry about his relationship with William. Prince Harry said he and his brother are on different paths. Juicy. It's all alleged, of course, but if rumours of the royal rift are true, this could be the biggest brotherly bust-up since Bros. In true tabloid spirit, we've all got to pick a side. Team Cambridge or Team Sussex? Team Wills or Team Harry? I think people generally prefer Harry because Prince William was the prince that was always sort of patiently, steadfastly waiting for death, whereas Harry was like the prince that never grew up. Like Peter Pan with less sense of boundaries. To dress as a Nazi would be an awfully big adventure. That was Harry! Harry is definitely my favourite prince, apart from obviously Fresh. Other royal commentators have described Meghan and Harry's move to speak up as very serious and a big mistake. What could they be hinting at? Don't get into any cars chauffeured by Prince Philip. In the end, we all know what Meghan's real mistake was, giving up a cushy life in La La Land to marry into a family of murdering lizards. Meghan's willingness to share and bear is all very modern, but if she wants to last as a member of the British monarchy, she's got to learn to do the one thing Brits do best, repress. Repression is the royal way. No successful royal got to where they were today by being honest about their feelings. Throughout her reign, the Queen stayed shtum on divisive topics like Brexit, Big Brother, and Rebecca Vardy's Instagram account. Prince William repressed his sexual urges so hard his hair fell out. And Prince Philip has managed to remain a national treasure by only ever revealing a tenth of his racism. Here's my message to Meghan. Just keep bottling it all up. Maybe even flick through a cheeky tabloid to take your mind off things. All any of us could do at this point is put up, shut up, and kick back with a copy of Hello magazine. Sure, the British press are invasive, intrusive, and harmful to our mental health, but have you seen what Pippa Middleton was wearing last week?
So 2019 has been a year of protest movements, people taking a stand, confronting the establishment and saying what they believe.
Yes, and for a wealth of different causes. For young people.
Climate change.
For Scots and Catalans.
Independence.
For ageing film directors.
Marvel movies being more popular than theirs.
Now, big protests are nothing new, of course. They're as old as humanity. There were big slave revolts against ancient Rome. And to protect the ringleader, dozens of different slaves stood up, claiming to be Spartacus. And then Lee Mack and a guest had to try and work out which one was telling the truth.
In England, we had the Peasants' Revolt, as Jacob Rees-Mogg described September's No Deal vote. But social media and technology have made protesting both easier to organise and more visible all across the world. Hong Kong, Lebanon, Spain, on Twitter after a Strictly eviction, and in Ecuador, where the scrapping of fuel subsidies left petrol so expensive that nobody could afford to drive anywhere.
Yeah, so protesters blocked the major highways, which was relatively easy.
Because nobody could afford to drive anywhere. And last week in London, underground passengers turned up to find trains delayed, mobs of angry people, and general mayhem.
And then Extinction Rebellion turned up and made it worse. Now, urban commuters are a pretty hardened bunch. It takes quite a lot to seriously annoy them, such as getting onto the roof of a train, or even worse, getting on the train with a guitar and a collection bucket.
But perhaps the commuters, who may well sympathise with Extinction Rebellion, just felt that gluing yourself to a low-emission electric mass transit railway wasn't really making the point protesters were trying to get over. And it certainly disrupted the system. For a start, the network didn't have a pre-recorded announcement for that scenario, which threw them in the control room.
We are sorry to announce that services have been delayed due to wrong points, staff, snow, signal...
Oh, sorry, it's none of them. Hang on, I'll have to do it myself.
We are sorry to announce that services have been delayed due to...
some numpty on a roof. Thank you.
Now, Extinction Rebellion do have their supporters. For example, they are very, very popular with...
Sky News Brexit Free.
They're very popular as a reliable source of footage of things Sky viewers enjoy, like watching people called Moonchild and Tarquin being thrown into a police van. But environmental protesters do seem to get a particularly hard time from the press.
Which is unfortunate, because like all protest groups, what they really want is the carbon dioxide of publicity.
You see, the awkward thing about climate change is that it's a bit like the civil service. You need at least 5 GCSEs to get into it. Geography, chemistry, maths, economics, and a foreign language is useful. And this has contributed to a general stereotype of climate protesters being middle class and oblivious to the dangers of disrupting roads.
Which isn't fair, because they took great care not to block routes for emergency vehicles or Ricardo vans. The other problem is that climate change is very slow and gradual in news terms. Ice cap melt is one of the few things that does actually move at glacial pace. In fact, glaciers are the only thing that moves at a glacial pace.
Also, don't assume that only young people support them. The current generation of pensioners are the same people who protested against Vietnam in the 60s, and they're watching today's protesters with a veteran's eye. They're not in front of their TVs shouting,
"These layabouts need discipline! Bring back national service!"
No. They're watching the fine details. They're like ex-players doing TV football punditry.
So, it was a good hard-fought battle there. What did you make of it, Alan?
Well, the Met have a big squad, Gabby, but they're predictable. Same formation, same tactics, down the middle every time. But the protesters have trained for it, so the youngsters are getting their chance and they're making darting little runs, dressing as TV characters.
The face painting and the yoga does seem to be working.
Yeah, well, they're making the police look old-fashioned and slow. It's just rote one kettling and truncheons every time. It might work here. But when they get to Europe and they meet the Gilets jaunes, they're going to get spanked.
So now, completing tonight's hat-trick of Edinburgh Comedy Award nominees, it's the totally, tonically talented Huge Davis.
Hello. Are we doing good? Yeah, cool, brilliant. I love politics, but these days, no one's talking about it. Imagine my delight when a dinner party I went to got extremely political.
Dinner party 2 nights ago, there was chip and dip and anecdotes, when a guy chipped in, sat by the stairs, started to talk about current affairs. He posed if the new withdrawal agreement would allow for a no-deal scenario. At the end of the transitional period, I just laughed to seem like I'd understood, because I didn't know what he was talking about. I didn't know what he was talking about. I thought if I kept on laughing, he might think that I know something. Then the girl sat next to me. She said the Northern Irish Assembly may have to vote periodically to consent to the ongoing protocol. And do we consider seriously the agreement of the border to the Irish Sea? I wasn't sure if she'd asked a question, so I said yes, it's something to consider. But I didn't know what she was talking about. I didn't know what she was talking about. I thought if I left the table, maybe I could look up some of the answers. At the bathroom I was queuing there with some people who weren't into politics. Yeah, they hated voting first past the post, and I nodded my head in total disgust, but I still didn't know what they were talking about. I still didn't know what they were talking about. I said I was extremely ill and left the dinner as soon as I could. Got a call on my way home. It said, "Hello, this is Radio 4. We need a 3-minute song about current affairs." They said it was paid, so I said I'd do it, but I don't know what I'm talking about. I don't know what I'm talking about. We don't know what we're talking about. None of us know what we're talking about. Thank you.
So, not all protests have to be about the big stuff, the climate change or Brexit. So we've asked our audience this week what small and possibly futile acts of rebellion that they have carried out.
Not shopping in a particular convenience store chain for 2 years. Why? Well, they blocked me on Twitter after I complained about their customer service. What happened? I got a job with them. I'm now a store manager.
Protesting against post office cuts by only buying second-class stamps. What happened? All my mail was late.
I slipped into the speedy boarding queue on EasyJet by mistake. Worth a punt. What happened? Back of the queue, luggage in the hold, last off the plane.
Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Goodbye. You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Ivo Graham, Sophie Duker, Karen Barkey and Huge Davis. It was written by the cast with additional material from Madeline Brettingham, Catherine Brinkworth, Gareth Gwynn and Alexander Lynch. The producer was Matt Strong, and it was a BBC Studios production.